This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. When he was in Vermont a month ago, Senator Patrick Leahy highlighted the need for criminal justice reform, saying the U.S. has, quote, an over-incarceration problem. Leahy is among a group of senior senators pushing hard for legislation that would reduce mandatory minimum sentencing for people convicted of nonviolent crimes and give more discretion to judges in some situations. The bill has bipartisan support, but it still faces an uncertain future. In mid-May, Arkansas Republican Tom Cotton said in a speech that, quote, we have an under-incarceration problem, if anything. Today, we explore where that criminal justice bill stands and why Vermont's senior senator feels so strongly about this issue. We'll also talk about other federal reforms to FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, to the EB-5 visa program. And Senator Leahy will answer your calls and comments on the issues that are important to you. You can post them at vpr.net/Vermont Edition or call 1-800-639-2211. Joining us now from the Senate recording studio in Washington is Senator Patrick Leahy. It's nice to have you back on the program, Senator.
Jane, it's good to be there, and I'm looking forward, of course, to being home this this weekend. We have the Vermont Women's Economic Opportunity Conference. You spoke at that, and we're getting a tremendous return of people who want to be at it. I'm looking forward to that.
And you have Loretta Lynch speaking at that this year.
I am. We've really had very good speakers, and she's coming, of course, Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor. Others have spoken there. I mentioned you have. And what I like are the number of people come up to me after and tell me what they gain by it. A small business owner, she connected with a national sporting goods firm. She signed a marketing contract. A young single mother who told Marcel and myself that after that she was inspired to go for higher education and has. I mean, it's a chance for women from all over the state to come together and say, we head up more companies than men in Vermont. Let's make sure we're paid the same, and let's make sure we have an opportunity, especially in sometimes hard economic times.
Well, so you'll be back in Vermont for that soon, but let's talk about some of the things happening in Washington, which you are certainly focused on at the moment. And I mentioned in my introduction the criminal justice reform bill that you've been working on. If this bill were to pass and we saw a lowering in mandatory minimum sentences for nonviolent offenders and more judicial discretion, what direct effect would you expect to see it have on incarceration, given that what you said is that we have an over-incarceration problem in this country?
We really do have an over-incarceration. We lock up more people than virtually any other country in the world. And I think we have to learn that you don't arrest yourself out of any problems you might face. Or we're spending tens of billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars with state and federal incarceration. In fact, 25 to 30% of the Department of Justice's budget just goes to run the prison system. So, I mean, that's money you can't use to go after terrorists. You can't use it for white-collar crime, fraud, and so on. You're just spending it to lock people up, a lot of them on these mandatory minimums.
So that's somebody, where you think the bill would help, is that if you reduce mandatory minimums, you're locking people up for less time?
I think it'd be a huge help. It's the beginning of reform. We still got a long way to go. But when you lock up somebody for 20 years for stealing a $50 or $100 item out of a store, our taxpayers really want to pay $40,000, $45,000 a year for that person to be in prison? Couldn't we do a lot better by making sure that there's alternatives to prison, that there's better probation? I look at what we've been doing in Vermont. I was in Rutland back here a week or two ago, looking at the federal drug court, where they're giving people a chance, instead of prison, to go straight to Judge Crawford runs it, where instead of being locked up, they're in intense rehabilitation. They have to prove they're going straight or they are going to go to jail. What happens, the taxpayers spend a lot less money. People are back being employed. They're cleaning up their lives. All of us benefit by that.
I should say as well, Vermont Edition is working on a story on the Federal Reentry Court program. This is for people who are coming out of prison, having served a time of incarceration and having a quite lengthy term of supervised release, what's often known as probation. And they can go through a reentry program, reentry court, to get a year off their probation. So stay tuned for that story. It'll be coming up soon.
Well, and I think those things are important. I mean, just what happens now, a lot of times people, okay, you served your sentence, walk out the door, goodbye, you're on your own. And if they've been locked up a long time, that's not going to work. You know, I spent 8 years as a prosecutor. I saw these people. I saw what happens when they go to jail. I saw what happens when they come out. And what we've done, we put together a coalition of Republicans and Democrats in the Senate who want to make these changes. We go across the political spectrum from the very conservative to the very liberal in both parties. And I think if it passes, we're going to be able to show that not only do we save people money, but we're going to save people's lives.
You know, the bill has been changed in recent months to add some provisions. It ensures that repeat offenders convicted of violent felonies are barred from getting early release, that repeat armed offenders can't benefit from this reduced mandatory sentencing guideline, and it actually enhances mandatory minimums for crimes involving certain opioids like fentanyl. And reporting has suggested that that was necessary to get more Republican support for the bill, but the bill still hasn't gone anywhere in recent week. So what is the likelihood, Senator, that it will pass?
It's going to be entirely up to the Republican leadership if they'll let it go through. I worry that the Republican leadership has done a number of things that are not helping us. They're not letting this bill go forward yet. And it's, you know, it's only the beginning of reforms. It's not all reforms. It's not all the reforms I would like, but it's a beginning. But when they say, we can't bring this up. We can't have a hearing on a Supreme Court justice. We can't allow the confirmation of judges in states that have judicial emergencies. All of that hurts our not only our criminal justice system, but all the justice system. And I think that's a mistake. I know that Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader, is on TV this weekend. He was talking about why he needs more Republican senators so he can block these things. I think I would like to say, I'd like to see somebody say, I'd like to have senators so I can get something done.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about confirmation hearings or the lack thereof later in the program. We're talking with Senator Patrick Leahy today. And if you have a question for him, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Let's go to Andrew, who's calling in from Burlington. Hi, Andrew. Go right ahead.
Yes, thank you. Hi, Senator Leahy.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm calling, sir. I have some concerns about the Zika virus. I was listening to the radio last night, and I see that there's 50 to 100 cases in the New York area. I've also been reading that the Senate is trying to work on something, but is also, as you talked about, Republicans blocking stuff. Can you comment, Senator Leahy, on how serious you think the Zika virus is? And maybe what the Senate can do. And thanks for being on. I'll take your answer off the air. Thank you,
Senator Leahy. I know that that Congress has been looking at funding for Zika virus research and where that funding would come from. We also know about 500 American residents have been diagnosed with Zika. Something like 157 pregnant women and one baby was born just recently with what is presumed to be Zika related microencephaly.
Yes, that child was born in New Jersey, but the Zika virus is over probably 80% of the country. The president asked for...
You mean the people who... Let me just clarify there, because so we don't alarm people. The Zika virus, people are infected.
Yes, of course.
But they've... No. All of the cases so far have come from people who were either traveling in currently affected countries or who have had sexual intercourse with other people who were traveling in affected countries.
No, but the Zika mosquitoes, I should say, are spreading throughout the country. Everybody, more and more people are at risk. Certainly travelers are at risk. And like any virus, it's only an airplane trip away. The president asked for $1.9 billion for the research we need, for the steps we need to combat Zika. I voted for that. Republicans refused, allowed it to go forward. So I worked with a bipartisan group, and our amendment did go through for $1.1 billion. It's a lot better than the House of Representatives has done. They act like we can wish it away. I think some of these same people that are going on television all the time acting as though Ebola was in the United States when we had one Ebola case in the U.S. of somebody who came here from another area. This is something that will affect the United States. I've talked with the people at... Our best scientists on this, people like Dr. Fauci, they need the money to do the research. They're trying to do the research to find an antidote for it, to find a way to stop it. But that can take a long time and a lot of money. The fact is, it is here now. People have been infected who have come into the United States. The baby that was born in New Jersey appears to have been infected by this. It is a horrible, horrible disease, and some of the same people vote for a blank check to go to war all over the world. They ought to think this war might be right here on our own borders, and they ought to be doing something about it. It's only a plane ride away. People are going to be continue to travel from the United States. We have got to work harder. The president is right. Spend the money and make Americans safe.
We're talking with Senator Patrick Leahy, looking right there at funding for Zika research, something that he's been strongly supporting. Other issues we're going to be tackling, his thoughts on the presidential race. We're going to look at the EB-5 visa program and reforms he's pushing for that federal visa program. If you have a question for him, you can call 1-800-639-2211. Let's go to Philip in Plainfield. Hi, Philip. You're on the air.
Hi, Senator Leahy. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
I'm wondering why you are not using your superdelegate vote to vote for Bernie as a representative of the Vermont constituency that has overwhelmingly voted for Bernie.
Before you answer, Philip, let me read you a couple of emails that we got, Senator, because it probably won't surprise you that we've been hearing from a lot of Vermonters on this. Deborah in Brattleboro says, please ask the senator why he's supporting Hillary Clinton. Vermont has spoken. His constituents have spoken with their vote to support Bernie Sanders, and yet he's endorsed Hillary Clinton. Roseanne from Greensboro, the people of Vermont have declared their preference. How can you not pledge to vote for Bernie? Selma from North Bennington, why are you supporting Clinton instead of your fellow Senator Bernie Sanders, in view of all her lies, vote rigging, support from big banks, warmongering, blind support for Israel, questionable use of private email server, and very questionable donations to the Clinton Foundations. How can you deny your state's preference for Bernie? And Chad, good luck getting reelected. Time to oust superdelegates and senators who don't listen to their constituents. You really blew it, Senator Leahy. I used to have more respect for you. You know, you came out, Senator, in support of Hillary Clinton early in the presidential race, and as a superdelegate, you've said that your vote would go towards Hillary Clinton. Many Bernie Sanders supporters in Vermont have expressed anger at that decision, especially given that Vermont's vote went overwhelmingly to Sanders in the primary. You did clarify your position earlier this spring, saying that you would tie your vote to the candidate who had the most pledged delegates at the convention. But you're looking at pledged delegates nationwide, not in Vermont specifically, and that hasn't mollified many of your detractors on this issue. Why not vote with your constituents whom you represent?
Well, there's a number of things. For one thing, I think Senator Sanders got 86% of the vote in the Vermont primary. He's actually right now got 86% of the delegates. He's done better at the delegate proportion in Vermont than he has in many other states. The fact of the matter is, if the pledged delegates, if the majority are for him at the convention, of course I'll vote for him. I think Bernie Sanders has done some wonderful things in raising a lot of issues. The issues he's raised for years and years in Vermont. Now he's been raising them nationally, and I'm delighted to see him do that. I told long before he ever talked about running for the presidency, I urged Secretary Clinton to run. I felt with the dangers we're facing around the world, I wanted somebody who had her sense of being able to handle that. And I told her I would support her. I think Vermonters know that I always keep my word. Certainly Senator Sanders hasn't asked me to break my word, nor would I expect him to.
But many of your Vermont voters would like to see you not break your word, but support the candidate who got the largest popular vote in the state and the largest amount of pledged delegates in the state.
If he has the largest number of pledged delegates going into the convention, of course I'll support him.
Yeah, but that's not what the people who are angry are saying. They're saying you should vote with Vermonters.
I've also had a lot of people tell me otherwise. They tell me to at least use my own judgment, which I'm doing, and I will continue to do. The fact of the matter is, if we want to change the way the so-called superdelegates and Senator Sanders has recently joined the Democratic Party, so he can be a superdelegate if he wants to be. If we change the way they vote, I'm fine with that. That's something that should come up. And I know he said he wants it to come up at the convention. I'll be supportive of that. But when I vote, I normally don't take polls how to vote. I was the only Vermonter who ever voted to end the war in Vietnam. When I did, the vast majority of people, it's hard to think of that today, were in support of the war in Vietnam. And I'd gone with my constituents who wanted to support the war in Vietnam. The war would not have been cut off by one vote in the Senate, my vote. I can point to a lot of other areas in that regard. In this case, I am glad that he will have the same number of delegates as the vote in Vermont reflects, 86% of the delegates.
You mentioned that Senator Sanders has not asked you to change your vote as a superdelegate. When was the last time you had a personal conversation with Senator Sanders? Are you two in communication?
No, we've talked now and then by phone. Of course, he has not been in the Senate. So, well, he was there for the State of the Union message. And Marcel and I had a great chat with both he and Jane. We sat right near them at the dinner before. In fact, I took a number of photographs of the two of them. And we have kept in contact that way. Marcel saw Jane just a couple weeks ago at the First Lady's luncheon. So and when he won the Vermont primary, of course, I called him the next day and had a long talk with him and congratulated him for doing that. But he knows that he knows me well enough to know that I always keep my word, and I'm not going to break my word.
We're talking with Senator Patrick Leahy today from Washington. We're going to look at his frustration over confirmation hearings for federal judges, including Supreme Court Justice nominee Merrick Garland, which have been stalled. Plus, we'll look at maybe fast track and trains to Canada through Vermont. We're going to talk about FISA reform and EB-5 visa programs. And if you have a question for Senator Leahy, now's the time to call 1-800-639-2211 or share your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today we're spending the hour with Vermont Senior Senator Patrick Leahy. He's answering your questions. If you have one for him, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211 or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Let's go to Bob calling in from Thetford Center. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call. Hi, Senator. Thanks for taking my question. My question was relating to how much groundswell there is for political activism now that Bernie has really lit the fire under a lot of people. And I'm looking at a lot of the sort of down ticket opportunities in Vermont and seeing some young people here in the Upper Valley who are quite active in trying to get into the Vermont legislature. And I'm wondering what the senator can do to make these down-ticket folks more prominent in the news. How do we get more people talking about what's going on around the state? And what can we do as voters to keep the momentum going? And lastly, I'm curious about GMO labeling and the impact that it's had across the country just from this little state of Vermont, and wonder if you have any insights on what's going on there and what threats could be on the labeling bill.
Bob, thanks for your call, and let's take those down races first, Senator.
Yeah, well, I am delighted to see more young people come in. Over the years, I've contributed a lot to the Vermont Democratic Party, as Republicans do to the Vermont Republican Party, but I've done it to get them to help on Get Out the Vote, to help young people get involved. One of the things that has helped me the most are the number of young people who always get involved in my campaigns, and it really makes it better. I wish more young people would. It's when they do, it makes the whole process better. I'm seeing more young people get elected to the Vermont legislature. I think that is great. I know if I had not had their help, I never would have been elected as the youngest senator in Vermont's history. And I will continue to put resources into our party, as I would hope Republicans would into their party, to encourage young people to get involved. When I go around the state, I'm home almost every week. As I go around the state, I'm delighted when they'll come up, come with me, talk to me, ask me questions. Now, in the GMO labeling, that has been a tough, tough fight. They have tried to knock out Vermont's law. We had a one vote margin in the Senate recently. I have spent more hours, evenings, weekends, negotiating with the Agriculture Committee and others to try to stop. I'm delighted to see that a number of major companies are now saying they will do something similar to what we have in Vermont with labeling. Campbell's Soup, for one. Now, that's one of the biggest companies there is. That makes a big difference. And I think it's because of what we started in Vermont. The current chairman of the Senate Agriculture Committee, Senator Roberts, has tried to pass legislation to stop Vermont's law. I fought that. I fought it in committee. I fought it on the floor. And I fought it to a standstill. I will continue to fight that. I've joined with Senator Merkley of Oregon for a bill to create a national mandatory on-package label.
Which is what many manufacturers are calling for, right, Senator? Because, I mean, the argument, and it may be a specious one, but many companies have said we need a nationwide labeling law. And they've pushed for voluntary labeling, which would basically, you know, supersede Vermont's law. But what about this idea of a mandatory law across the country? Do you think you have any traction?
I think it should be mandatory. And I'm delighted to see a number of large companies, some reluctantly, I'll admit, but they've come in and they've told me, the heads of those companies have told me They are labeling their food. They know that I'm not – that I'm going to keep fighting it and stop them from overriding Vermont's law. They know I'll succeed on that. And I think they'll keep trying. Now, we have until July 1st for them to block it. But we Vermonters set the standard. We're not saying you can't have GMOs. We're just saying truth in labeling. And that's the way I keep arguing about it, is truth in labeling. When you buy something in the store, you ought to know what's in it. I wrote the original Organic Farm Bill. Again, it was so people would know what they're getting. And I think you have more and more consumers who look at what they're buying. And they now they may decide for cost or whatever reason to buy things with GMOs. That's fine. That's a decision they make. But they ought to know what they're getting.
Senator, I want to ask you about the EB-5 visa program. You've been vocal about what you see as a need for reforms to this federal program. And just to recap for people, this is, as I said, a federal program. It allows foreigners to invest $500,000 in a rural development initiative, $1 million in an urban one, and prove that they've directly or indirectly supported the creation of at least 10 jobs. And in exchange, they get a permanent residency card for themselves and for their families. And this is, of course, the program that was purportedly supporting the massive construction projects in the Northeast Kingdom. But we recently saw a federal civil fraud charge filed against the two main developers of those projects, Bill Stenger and Ariel Quiros. You've had ties to Bill Stenger for years. You've called him a friend. You've expressed support for those projects. Do you now regret being vocal about your support?
I don't regret being vocal about the support of the EB-5 program or getting jobs into the Northeast Kingdom. I've also been very vocal at seeking reforms in the EB-5 after we saw a major fraud in Chicago with it. I know, you know, I've been fighting for years to get money into rural areas, to get capital in there. I thought this program, even when it began under Governor Jim Douglas, I supported it. I've supported it all the way through. Actually, all of us in the congressional delegation, Senator Sanders, Congressman Welch, and I have. What we don't support is somebody using it for fraud. I've seen the stories about these investigations. Again, I'm a former prosecutor. I want these investigations to go forward. If people have broken the law, whether it's people I know or not, then they should be prosecuted. There's no question about that. But what I'm concerned about is the people, especially in the Northeast Kingdom. I talked to so many carpenters and plumbers, electricians, who told me how happy they were to finally have jobs that paid something commensurate with their skills. And I worry about them because they have their hopes in the future on keeping these jobs. So I'm hoping that the receiver who's been appointed can keep the jobs going, can make it a success. It's a beautiful area. I feel very betrayed by what happened. I feel terribly betrayed by it.
But by Bill Stenger personally?
By Stenger and his partner for this to happen. This is not what it was told to people in past administrations and this administration. It's not the way it was described to them. That's why now having the federal authorities look into it is a good thing, because we'll find out exactly what happened. I know where EB-5 has worked out very well. My own, you know, my home in Middlesex, I look out my living room window, and I can see Sugar Bush across the valley. There they've done it very, very well. And they've hired, here again, I've talked to the men and women who work there, and they are delighted they're getting jobs and decent salaries. They can raise their families. They can have a future. That's what we want for all Vermonters. Vermont Country Home Products, the same way. So we know it can work. We know it can create jobs for Vermonters. And at a time when we should all be pushing for better jobs and more jobs for Vermonters, it should. That's why I'm hoping the federal authorities have come in here and the receivers who come in here and can put it back together and keep those jobs in the Northeast Kingdom. The Northeast Kingdom has always been a special place for me. I have the REAP program, which has brought a couple $100 million into the Northeast Kingdom for jobs, and I'll continue to do that. But I'll also continue to fight for the bill that Senator Grassley and I have fought for, that we passed through the Senate once. I will continue to pass it over some who don't want it, but we'll put in stricter and stricter controls.
We got a note from Stephen who wants to know what you'll do to restore Vermont's reputation with foreign investors. Stephen writes, "We in southern Vermont were very much hoping to use EB-5 to help recover from Vermont Yankee's departure and transition to a green innovation economy that addresses the challenges of climate change. Do you think this does damage the program for foreign investors who are perhaps thinking about investing in Vermont or elsewhere in this country when they see fraud charges here and elsewhere?"
Yeah. I hope not. Commissioner Moulton gave a very, very good statement on this the other day. She talked about the amount of investment coming in Vermont and that will continue to come into Vermont. I think that what Vermont has to do is make sure these people are vetted very, very carefully. Whether it's in southern Vermont or northern Vermont, of course, Northeast Kingdom has always been special. Marcel was born there. My mother was born there. I've had a relationship with the kingdom for years. But what I want to do, and we'll do anything the state would ask to do, to make sure the reforms that I push for are in there. If they're not, the EB-5 will end. If the reforms are passed, then I think people can look at it and say, okay, this works. Let's bring money into underserved areas like rural Vermont. And I think we can point to things like Vermont Country Kitchens. We can point to Sugarbush and say, see, it does work.
And by those reforms, just briefly, and then we'll move on to other topics, you mean more scrutiny, more oversight, better ability to be able to detect something like this earlier on in the process?
Yes, and I think that would have stopped what happened in Chicago, where they had a massive fraud. You know, every time you move in a lot of money, make sure you've got controls of where it goes. And I will, of course, continue to keep pushing for the jobs in Vermont. I mean, we have Chuck Grassley and I have increased background checks, we have annual financial reporting, securities oversight, federal audits, mandatory site visits. It's transparency and accountability. If you have transparency and accountability, the people who want to defraud are going to go somewhere else.
Well, and we're going to talk about Chuck Grassley again in just a moment as we look at why he, as chair of the Judiciary Committee, has said no way, no how will there be a confirmation hearing for Merrick Garland on the Supreme Court issue. We're talking with Senator Patrick Leahy all hour this hour. And if you have a question for him, you can still get it in. You can go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition or call 1-800-639-2211. I'm Jane Lindholm. This is Vermont Edition, and today we're spending the hour with Vermont Senior Senator Patrick Leahy. He's answering your questions for a few more minutes. If you have one, call 1-800-639-2211 or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Senator, I mentioned that the chair of your committee, Senator Chuck Grassley, has said there won't be a hearing for Merrick Garland, President Obama's choice to take the Supreme Court seat that was vacated by the death of Antonin Scalia. Are you ready to, you know, basically throw up your hands and concede that that's just not going to happen and it's not worth spending your breath on anymore?
Oh no, I'm going to keep bringing this up. I get a lot of mail and calls, emails from not only Vermont but around the country, saying the Senate ought to do its job. I was discouraged when I heard Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader, say that as long as he's in the majority, we're not going to have this. We're not going to have a hearing for Judge Garland. And frankly, that's why he wants to elect more Republican senators. He wants to make sure that he can stop things like that. I'd rather see leaders say, let's do our job. The Constitution says for the president shall nominate. The president's done that. It also says the Senate shall advise and consent. Having a group of Republican senators meet in the Republican leader's office behind closed door and come out and say, no, you can't have a hearing, that's not advise and consent. If we had followed the routine we've always done in the past, we would have had a confirmation vote in the Senate floor last week. I've never seen anything like this. I've heard them come up and they'll give great speeches on the floor. We never have confirmation votes for a justice in a presidential election year. Well, of course we have. We have even after the election. We've had a dozen of them. The most recent one was when the Democrats were in charge of the Senate, a Republican president, Ronald Reagan, and we confirmed his justice to the Supreme Court. This is very similar to them complaining when I set the schedule for Sonia Sotomayor. They complained that I was rushing her confirmation until I went on the Senate floor and showed that it was to the day the schedule that they had had for Justice Roberts. And I said, you mean your schedule is okay for him? Our schedule is not okay for her? After that, they shut up. I think Senator McConnell, and I know him well, but he's really doubled down on dysfunction in the Senate. But now he's doing the same thing to the Supreme Court. They've had several 4-4 decisions, which means if you have circuit courts who are on either side of the four, they don't know where to go. We don't have a settling in the law. It has made it impossible for the Supreme Court to do the job it is supposed to do. In the Senate, because the Senate's not doing its job. And when you have Republican senators who have said, well, gosh, we should have a man like Merrick Garland, especially when President Obama nominated two women, they said, oh, we ought to have a man like Merrick Garland. Now they won't allow him to have a vote. The hypocrisy is overwhelming. But it also is really the theme of a lot of their Senate races around the country. It's one of the reasons they spent millions of dollars in New Hampshire before the Democrat even announced for the Senate, because the only way that Senator McConnell can stop things like this is if he has a majority of Republicans in the Senate.
Well, safe to say you're feeling rather partisan at the moment, and it is an election year, of course, and this stuff matters. Let me get a call in from Alfonso in South Royalton. Hi, Alfonso. Go ahead.
Hi, and thank you very much for taking my call. So I'm originally from South Florida, and I was curious if you could comment on how the U.S. will be moving forward with the new relationship with Cuba. It would be great to hear what your thoughts are on that.
Senator Leahy?
Well, we had, we had over 50 years of an embargo and basically shunning Cuba, thinking that that would bring about changes. Well, it didn't. It just enabled the leaders in Cuba, actually the two Castro brothers, to hold their power because they could say everything is going wrong in Cuba is because of the United States. Now, about 14, 15 years ago, Marcel and I made our first trip to Cuba, spent some time with Fidel Castro, kept up a correspondence with him, worked to get Elian Gonzalez back to his parents. To his father. I became the first American official to meet with Raul Castro Again, we developed a relationship. I also worked, of course, with President Obama right from the start, saying we've got to change our relations with him. And that's finally happened. I got Alan Gross, who was in prison. When we changed relations, I took the president's plane, went down with Alan Gross's wife, and picked him up from prison. We had others that same way. I'm watching what at the baseball game a few weeks ago in Cuba. It was interesting just watching the faces of the people there, the people I talked with them in the ball field. They were glad to see it happen. But we have to still have more reforms. I don't agree with some of their repression on free speech. I don't agree with some of their monolithic ways of handling things. But I do know things can be better. I'm working with Jeff Flake, a Republican from Arizona, to lift the travel ban bill. And we put together a bipartisan coalition to do that. Cuba is not a threat to us. But the Cuban people are never going to have the freedoms they want so long as the United States treats that country as a pariah, and their leaders can blame everything that goes wrong on the United States.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there for today, but Senator Leahy, I'd love to have you back on the program soon so we can talk about some reforms that you're pushing to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act and other issues that are going on in Washington that are important to you and important to Vermont constituents. Thank you so much for being on the program this hour.
Jane, thank you, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
And speaking of Vermont senators, last week we marked the 15th anniversary of Senator Jim Jeffords' defection from the Republican Party. The decision was personal for him, and it triggered a shakeup that changed the balance of power in the U.S. Senate, including pushing Senator Leahy into a position of power in the Judiciary Committee. Here are a few reactions VPR captured back in May 2001 at a Montpelier diner.
I think for us in Vermont, it's certainly made a wonderful symbolic difference. I have mailed Thanks Jim bumper stickers to a number of people in other states.
I think it shifted the balance from the far right, and it just really slowed down a more conservative agenda.
I think that Republicans are much more apt to act for the security of the United States and for the rest of the world, and in these recent times, we definitely need a more conservative government, and by shifting power of the U.S. government over to a more liberal standpoint, it's been a bad thing.
Now, many of you reacted to our historical and political examination of Jeffords' decision to leave the GOP. Joining me now to read a few of your messages is our show's executive producer, Patty Daniels. Hi, Patty.
Hi, Jane. So we heard from listeners who expressed both gratitude for Jeffords and also from people who continue to feel resentment. And here's a sample of comments. First, from Douglas in Essex Junction. He was at the Radisson Hotel in Burlington where Jeffords made his announcement. And Douglas posted on our Facebook page, "I was fortunate enough to be standing at one of the doors to that ballroom 15 years ago. I was never more proud of a Vermonter and the courage of his convictions."
Beverly in Burlington emailed to say the morning of May 25th, 2001, our radio turned on at 6 a.m. I continued to doze a bit longer as usual. Sometime later, I almost turned to my partner with wistful news that I'd just awoken from the best dream. But before I did, I heard further reporting and learned with a thrill of joyful disbelief that it had not been a dream at all. The news floating by my dozing ears had worked its way into my consciousness. I was not awakening from the best dream. I was awakening to the best dream. Jim Jeffords will forever live in a very warm place in my heart for what he did for our country.
But to be sure, Jane, there were plenty of Vermont Republicans who felt betrayed by Jim Jeffords. He had been just reelected as a Republican 6 months before his decision to leave the party. And to that point, Michael posted, "It was completely selfish, and his decision changed the balance for the country. An elected official from any one state should not have that kind of power. He disregarded the vote of every Vermonter. Anyone who respects the decision should really ask themselves how they would feel if the situation had been reversed."
Well, thank you for all of your points of view. The diversity of opinion makes this program a better conversation for everyone to learn from, and we really appreciate it. You can get in touch with us on Twitter or Facebook. We're at Vermont Edition, or you can email email vermontedition@vpr.net. Patty, thanks.
You're welcome.
That does it for today. Tomorrow, the tiniest creatures can cause astonishing health problems, as we've been learning about Zika. But in this case, I'm talking about ticks. We are going to talk about research in Vermont into the abundance of ticks and the prevalence of the disease bacteria they can carry. You can send your questions, your experiences with ticks to vermontedition@vpr.net. And be sure to join us for that show tomorrow. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri, Sam Gail Rosen, and our new producer, Meg Malone. Welcome to Meg. We had production assistance from Gene Murphy. Liam Connors directed the show, and our executive producer is Patty Daniels. Our theme music was composed by Grace Potter and the Nocturnals. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.